Hi, and welcome to today's meeting of Book Hoarders Anonymous. Let's all begin by introducing ourselves.
Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hoarders Anonymous. I'm Erin.
And I'm Shannon.
And this is episode L, everyone. And in case you don't know what that means, you'll figure it out eventually. The last one was 49, so this is episode L.
Episode L.
And yeah, we're here. It's already the beginning of September. I can't believe it. How was your summer?
My summer was pretty good. It felt like it, you know, now that I'm... have been like working for a long time. I feel like I don't miss this. I don't like the change of the seasons. I notice them, but It's like, where did it go?
I feel the same way. And this summer
I was at work all summer.
That's what I was doing. And I feel the same way. And this summer is seemingly more than other summers. I feel like it just zipped by.
Now it's pumpkin spice season again.
Yum. And I'm like still wearing my summer clothes. Like I want it to still be summer because they're so comfortable.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because there are a couple of really nice summer outfits that I have that I love wearing. And
me too.
Oh, yeah, I get to wear them for the last time, hopefully.
Yeah, I wore one of my nice summer dresses to church today. And I'm like, oh, I don't want this to be the last time I wear this. It's so comfy.
Yeah, and I don't really have a lot of very good, like, fall and winter dresses either.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to get some, but I don't have very many.
I don't either, and I didn't have very many summer dresses and summer outfits, and I went and got some over the summer, and I don't really have any good fall, winter things. I mean, you know, I kind of changed shape over the past couple of years, and what I have, I was kind of waiting to see if I was going to change shape again. So I didn't really purchase anything for my new shape, and I probably should have. So in the summer, I did. I went out and purchased some new stuff, but now I have to go purchase fall and winter stuff, and it just seems like, ugh. I really don't want to, because I don't want the financial burden of it, but.
Right.
It's okay. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Yep.
Speaking of which, we should probably get on with this podcast. So let's talk about what we read for over the past couple of months.
Being able to talk would be really helpful with that.
That would be a good thing.
You know, I feel like I read a lot, but I have not read... Mostly I've been reading a lot of my old favorite sort of authors that I enjoy. I read several books by Grace Burroughs, who writes historical romances I like. And let's see. I read, I think the things that come to mind that I read that I could talk about, mostly I liked what I was reading, but nothing was so awesome that I, you know, want to dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did read a book for the book club that I go to, that I didn't enjoy.
Talk about it.
So I read Brighton Rock by Graham Greene last month.
Oh, God. Poor thing.
My coworker ended up going to that book club meeting anyway. So I felt like it was kind of a waste of everybody's, my time, because he was the one that had recommended that we do that book for the book club. And it was one of those things, every time I talked to him about it, I was like, well, I really like the narrator's pretty good.
Yeah.
But it was such a slog. It was, it's a book about these very unlikable people, one of whom, our main character, he's this, gangster kid in the 1930s.
Right.
In Brighton. And, it's just, it's sort of like poised as this sort of tragedy or something. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, he was a terrible person. He was a sociopath. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care what, like, everything that happened to him, it was a good thing that it did.
Right. Exactly. And I feel like a lot of Graham Greene's characters are like that.
And I was so tired of hearing about, like, the, you know, the woman that he, that sort of opposed to him on this, this journey that he's on. Like, I was so tired of hearing about her breasts. I need a lot of romance, you guys. So, you know, like, I should not, I hear about, I read about breasts a lot, but there is something about, like, just, like, a man writing about women in that way. Like, you know, I don't care about her breasts.
Very funny. I haven't read it, so I can't judge, but I've read enough Graham Greene to know that it would probably have been a slog. I'm not surprised.
But I think the best thing I read that was by a new, well, not new, I've read other things by her, but I read a book called, God, it has one of those romancy titles that's awful. It's the first book in Elizabeth Lane's Elizabeth Hoyt's Maiden Lane series.
Ah.
I think Wicked Intentions. Mm-hmm. I just, like, all of her books have such awful titles.
Yeah, they do. They're really generic. Really bad.
But I really wasn't expecting a whole lot out of this book, but what drew me to it was that it was a little bit darker than a lot of the historical romance I'd been reading, but also kind of over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's set in this, like, in St. Giles, which is a famously bad neighborhood in London. I don't know if it still is. I would like to know. or Seven Dials is the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this guy this was, you know, a hero is sort of a dissolute rake, like they all are in
mm-hmm.
historical romances. And he was looking for the killer of his, of this woman. He was his mistress. And then he meets this woman that runs this sort of foundling home for orphaned children. And, like, and then there are all these subplots as they kind of solve this mystery together. And one of which is about that there's this guy roaming the streets in kind of a harlequin mask and, like, protecting the city from, so he's basically Regency era Batman. And the ghost of Seven Dials. And I was highly amused by that. And then there's, like, this river pirate that shows up in other books. And I it was over the top, but it was really fun.
That sounds like fun, actually.
Yeah. I just came up with the title Wicked Intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was read by, I read the Bard version, which was done by Madeline Bizzard. And I think that she's sounding a little old these days, but this was a pretty good performance.
Oh, good. Yeah, she is sounding a little old. I agree.
So that's basically, like, the best and worst of what I read
okay.
over the past couple of months.
Well, I've been reading these little bitty short books this past couple of months because I just can't seem to settle to anything. So, like, these little novella things kept falling in my lap, and I read a couple. And one of the books I read was a decent length, but I will talk about the little short books. I think the best thing I read this month was something that was recommended on the All the Books podcast from the Book Riot podcast network. And Liberty Hardy reads all these crazy, like, sci-fi and young adult books. she read a book called River of Teeth by Sarah Gailey. And All the Books, in case some of you don't know, is a podcast about new books that are out, new releases that are out. And I found this on Bookshare. I've been going to Bookshare lately and looking for the new releases that All the Books girls talk about. And been finding a good number of them on Bookshare and loving them all. So I encourage all of you to check out that podcast. And if you're visually impaired, Bookshare has a lot of them. Anyway, this book, River of Teeth by Sarah Gailey, was hysterical. Speculative fiction. So she bases this book on something that Congress actually debated doing in real life. In the 1890s, the U.S. Congress debated turning Louisiana, basically, and the surrounding Delta regions into this, like, hippopotamus farm. So farming and using that marshland to breed hippopotamuses. Hippopotami? What do you call that? Anyway, hippopotamus. Yeah. To breed hippopotamus and farm them for their meat and other, you know, bones and use their products, byproducts, basically, for different stuff, like eating and fuel and all kinds of things. Well, fortunately for us, Congress did not do that. But in Sarah Gailey's universe, this is going to be a series, folks, Congress did that. So River of Teeth, basically, New Orleans is a big hippopotamus farm. There are like hippo plantations all over the place, and people ride the hippos. They, they farm them, and they breed them, and they're all kinds of different breeds, and they're bred for different purposes. It's very... And it's like this whacked out Western with all these crazy characters in it. When you were talking about Graham Greene and his book, it reminded me of this book in a way, because the characters are all kind of like these villains, villain, bounty hunter, gangster people, and they get caught up in this adventure. And they're all basically, they're very cutting edge characters. I really enjoyed the characters more than the adventure, which was just sort of like a Western romp with hippopotamuses. and yeah, I'm not doing a good job with this. But anyway, so there's this guy, Winston, who's the main sort of like gangster thug. And they're, he's in with a team of fellow thugs. There's a murderess, a woman who's a murderer, and another woman who has her own special talents. I believe she's a poisoner. And then the demolition expert, actually, that they've hired to do this thing. I don't even remember what it was, since I read it so long ago, that they were trying to do, or that they were hired to do. But an expert in basically, demolition and blowing things up is a gender neutral individual named Hero, who apparently is going to be the focus of the next book. So that was a very interesting person to read about, and how she changed the pronoun structure and the language a little bit whenever things were from Hero's point of view. So I think the best part of the book for me was the character development. The other parts of it, I don't really remember them, but the characters were very well drawn, especially for this being a very short little romp that I sat through, read in a couple of hours. So again, River of Teeth by Sarah Gailey.
I'm going to put that on my list.
Yeah, it was fun. There were some laugh out loud moments. And if you're not really interested in anything, no deep thoughts, you know, no profound meaning, just a wonderful romp of speculative fiction with these hippopotamuses, and, you know, sort of, don't make those hippopotamuses mad now. I kept thinking of oh my God, what is that book? The T.J. Klune book with the guy who fell in the hippopotamus exhibit at the zoo?
Oh!
Yes, well, some people fell in the water in this book with the hippopotamuses, and they just didn't get warned. They got chewed up. So, and that was pretty graphic, but the book in general is very fun, and I really enjoyed it. So, River of Teeth, everyone.
So, does anybody want a hippopotamus for Christmas?
No, I don't. After reading this book, I really don't want a hippo for Christmas. And as I was reading it, that song was also going through my head, which made it really kind of annoying. but yeah. No,
it's going through mine right now.
Oh, God. Okay. The next book I read was also a very funny romp by Claudia Burney. And I don't even know how I found this book. I was searching Bookshare with my Victor stream, and it just sort of popped up. It's called The Exorcista. Sista. And so the main character, the protagonist in this book, is this Black girl, African-American girl, really. She's not even 18 yet, who's still in the foster system. And she can see demons. So she's she meets up with this priest and this Latino guy who's like not that much older than her, who wants to be a priest. And they're like this, they're on this team that does exorcisms, real live exorcisms. And they're on the team with, of course, the psychologist and the doctor, the primary care physician, and all these other people who are on it to make sure that it's really an exorcism and not actually schizophrenia or other such maladies. And it turns out that the girl to be exorcised is the protagonist's friend from childhood, like her best childhood friend. She gets involved on the team because she can actually see demons. And so, much to the upset of the priest, who's a like old guy, kind of traditional, they bring her in as a sort of a demon spotter. And I think this is also going to be a series. Like the River of Teeth, it was a nice, fun romp. Takes place in modern day, just with a girl who can see demons and works for exorcists. And it, you know, she needed a place to crash, and she ends up being on the exorcist team because she runs away from her foster family. And somehow by the end of the thing, she's like working for the exorcism people. So it was cute, and I really enjoyed it. It's called Exorcista, and there is a second one out called Exorcista Returns, where she goes, I guess, looking for her mother, who is currently locked up in an insane asylum because she can see demons and it got out of hand. And so now she wants to go look for her now that she's an adult. I haven't read it, but I may check it out. Another fun two-hour romp. And the third thing that I just wanted to mention, somewhat serious thing that I read. It took a while to get through it, but I did finish it. It was wonderful. And the author's name is just wonderful. So the book is called A Floating Life. It's by Simon Elegant. That is his real name.
Oh, that is wonderful.
I looked it up.
I love that.
I thought it was just like, I was like, okay, like, is this David Palmer? Like, I'm not understanding. I got this one off of Bard. So, no, but I looked it up, and that is his real name. He is a British Chinese historian. A British historian of Chinese history.
Gotcha.
And he has written some novels about various periods in Chinese history. And this one, this novel, Floating Life, is about Li Bo, or Li Po, as it looks in regular print. He was a poet in, 600-700 AD in China, in real life. I mean, he was a real person. And there are poems of his floating around all over the place. He was an alcoholic, and it basically ruined his life, kind of self-destructive in that way. But Simon Elegant kind of recreates his life in this book. He was actually exiled from the Chinese court. And so if you're exiled from mainland China in this particular era of history, you have to basically live on the rivers. Because if you're exiled from the mainland, if you're exiled from China, you have only two options: live on the rivers or leave the territory, you know, leave the boundaries of the empire. And so he chose to live on the rivers, and he had a barge with officials, and it was like his floating little domain, following him around. You know, all these officials follow him around. And he wanted, in his old age, in this book, to tell his, like, the memoir of his life to someone so that it can be, it could be recorded for posterity. And as a poet who did not ever really gain, you know, the favor of the emperor, he kind of talks about his life in this book and the ups and downs that he had, and the self-destructive things that he did to himself. And it was a really wonderful book. I have been a fan of his poetry for a long, 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 long time. And so for me, it was a very meaningful read. I don't know that it would have been very meaningful for people who were not interested in Chinese history or in Li Bo's poetry. So heads up, if you're not interested in Taoist poetry or in anything, you know, in Chinese history or philosophy, this is not going to be a book that you're going to enjoy. I don't think. But I did. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, allusions of things that happened and that I understood. And I think that one of the faults of the book is that it doesn't really bring the historical context into perspective for people who really don't know much about that period of time and that part of the world. But I did enjoy it, and I would recommend it, especially if you like, well, and even if you kind of like poetry, that may draw you in, because there are a lot of poems in here. And some of them are, you know, profound, and some of them are just fun. Some of them, most of them actually, are really, you know, are not created by the author. They're actually poetry by the various folks, Confucius and Dufu and Li Bo and all the other people that were famous around that time and revered. So, yeah, it was okay. I felt at some points it was a little bit heavy and a little bit, you know, not enough context, but, you know, for the average reader, but it was fun. So that's enough about me. I felt like I rambled forever. Again, that's A Floating Life by Simon Elegant. How elegant.
How elegant.
Yes.
Elegant.
Elegant. Okay. So let's move along and talk about our news items for the month, if I can get them up. Let's see. So the average, the Twitterverse exploded on August 9th. It was National Book Day. Book Day. No, wait, that's wrong. National Book Lovers Day. I don't know much to say about it, except people were tweeting with various hashtags on that day. Love to read, book lovers. I think personally these national days are getting out of hand.
They really are. Like, do we really need a National Cheesecake Day or National whatever today is? Although I do sometimes like to, like, you know, you can Google, I forget what the website is, but you know, it's sometimes kind of fun to go look and see what the various days are.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, that's one of the great things about Twitter that mm-hmm. I love is that, you know, the book discussions, you know, if you follow people that are into that sort of thing, you know, I feel like I get a lot of really solid book recommendations from Twitter.
I do too. And it's one of the cool things also about Twitter is that you can follow the conversation either using the Twitter website or using an API client or your phone. And you can pull up whatever the discussion is. You can pull up all the tweets that are involved in that discussion or with a certain hashtag, and you can involve yourself to a greater extent. I mean, because, you know, honestly, people don't follow their timeline so assiduously that they're seeing every tweet from every person and can build the discussion. So I really do like how Twitter gives you those tools to follow a discussion and pull in even more, you know, topics of interest. And even the trending topics are kind of fun to look at. I think that's actually how I found out about Book Lovers Day, was I looked up the trends. I have like a trends buffer that updates itself, and that's what was going on that day. So I was like, huh, interesting. Okay. And when you want to run a bookstore, how do you become successful in this day and age? I mean, you know, I feel like people love books. They're going to want to buy books. They're going to want to buy bookstores. Maybe. If their bookstores have certain other criteria. Basically, if you're a bookstore, in order to be really successful, if you want to be an indie bookstore, sell books. If you want to be a big chain bookstore and make big business out of it, have other business in your bookstore. Like Barnes & Noble with their coffee cafe, and Amazon to some extent with their other items, which have really eclipsed their books now.
Really, books are just a tiny part of what Amazon sells.
Yeah, but if you want to be big business, you have to have something that draws people in. And I feel like they're right that Barnes & Noble has done it really well with a little cafe, like inviting in Starbucks and, you know, those other people to partner with them. So you need to have something that draws people in. And often food is a big draw for bookstores. So that's what they choose to do. But you can read more about that with the NPR article. And the one last thing about bookstores that I would like to say, which is rather sad, is that there is an indie bookstore called Blue Stocking Books that was harassed by white supremacists. Five ALT right affiliated, alt-right. ALT right? That didn't look right. Alt-right affiliated individuals entered Blue Stockings bookstore and planted copies of Milo Yiannopoulos's book on their shelves and photographed it alongside the Blue Stocking merchandise. When confronted about bringing a known white supremacist's book into the store, the folks didn't stop and behaved aggressively towards staff members. So I just wanted to point that out. That is very sad. It happened in the wake of Charleston. Was it Charleston, West Virginia?
Charlottesville.
I had a CH and I'm getting everything confused these days. Charlottesville, Virginia, riots. So that is very unfortunate and distressing. I'm sorry. That's a what were you thinking moment, if ever there was one.
No kidding.
Now, we are going to interrupt our regularly scheduled programming to tell you about this public service, this important public service announcement. Anyone offered large quantities of chocolate via unconventional channels should report it to the police immediately. Quote, we trust you'll abide by those instructions from law enforcement in Germany, where more than 20 tons of chocolate have gone missing after thieves stole a refrigerated trailer packed with Nutella, Kinder Surprise eggs, and other treats. All told, police in Neustadt believe the confection stolen over the weekend of the 15th could be worth upward of $80,000, according to German newspaper, and I'm not even going to bother pronouncing that. And a spokesman told local media their perpetrators would have needed a truck of their own, not just a car, to be able to tow away such heavy cargo. As the newspaper notes, the chocolates weren't the only treats purloined from Germany this weekend. And I'm reading this whole article because it's just hysterical. Another trailer, this one packed with 30 tons of fruit juice, disappeared from Wittenberg over the weekend as well. Fruit juice and chocolate. Now, it will be noted, Germany is not the only place to suffer from brazen grand theft larder. Of course, there was that time Austrian police sniffed out, literally, more than 9 tons of stolen garlic stuffed into vans crossing the Hungarian border. Or, if you would prefer to go against the grain with a stateside story, there's always the guy who stole a bakery's delivery truck in New York City and started randomly passing out bread all the time, clad only in his underwear. And the article goes on, but I had to read that first part to you. It was just hysterical. I was up here laughing over it before the podcast even started, and I've read the thing I don't know how many times, and I laugh every time. If you're offered lots of Nutella, because they may not have run out of that $80,000 worth, 20 tons of Nutella, giving it away yet. They may have had to go around the world to do that. I mean, you know, Nutella is good and all, but people can only eat so much, give away so much in one place. So if you're offered Nutella by unconventional means, let the police know. It's an international incident.
Do that.
Yeah, exactly. So we bring you this silly, silly laughter to lead you into a disappointing announcement. We are going to be discontinuing this podcast until further notice.
Yeah, it's been a great, I've definitely enjoyed this 4 years, well, maybe a little less than that.
Almost four.
But it's definitely time. We've both had a lot of stuff going on in our personal lives, and we're, you know, I think we need to take the podcast in new and different directions, but at the moment we just need a break.
So haven't been able to.
I don't know how long that break will last, but...
haven't been able to figure out what those different directions are going to be yet. If any of you have any suggestions for what different directions we can go in, please let us know. And we will tell you again how to do that at the end of the podcast. But I bring you this announcement now. Don't stop listening, though, because we have a book to talk about. I bring you this announcement now just to show you, just to tell you that this book is kind of a prime example of why I think we need to go in different directions.
Yeah.
We're having trouble finding books. It's not, you know, the past few books that we've found have been kind of like, eh. And so we need to figure out a new something for us to do. The book that we chose for this month is called Canyon of Remembering by Leslie Pauling Kempis. And I chose the book and regretted it. Kind of figured I would, but it wasn't as bad as I thought.
No, it was not. I was dreading it for a while, and it took a while, mostly I think because the description that they had on the Bard website did not actually tell us anything about what the book was about.
No, it didn't.
I hadn't, and not neither did like any of the, you know, when I was looking it up on Amazon just to try to find a better book description. Like basically they just put the book jacket information in the Bard annotation.
Yeah.
I liked it okay. It was probably not a book I would have read on my own,
yeah,
given how awful that description was.
It was horrible.
It was not what I thought it would be. I really was expecting it to be more of a Western, but it's only a Western in the sense that it is, in fact, set in the Southwest.
Yeah. It's not at all about cowboys and Indians. Yeah. Although there are Indians, but it's not the same, like, you know, like scrap fighting and everything that you would anticipate. It's basically,
which was fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have liked that either. But.
No, I actually really, I liked the beginning and I liked the end, and the middle was kind of like, whew, it just seemed like it was a little bit overdone, but basically, you know, Whitney as an artist is going and decides to go live in this out of the way place, for no reason that I really can think of.
I feel like he needed a new change in direction,
kind of like this podcast. So he goes out there and he meets all the people and falls in love with the place. And there was a very sort of sweet, component. I mean, with the Vietnam War veteran who's kind of a little bit off his rocker and has done some pretty terrible things. So, you know, some very redemptive things that happen in the book as well.
Yeah,
and I thought that was very...
Which is the kind of thing that I normally am all about, but I think that it, you know, part of it was that although this was a better narration than the On Silver Wings book that we also read, she was the wrong choice.
Yeah, I agree.
She had this like very pronounced British accent, and it just
didn't work for the
pronunciation of the Spanish was fine,
mm-hmm.
but it was just it kept intruding, I think, more than it should have, and it was just like too much. I don't know. I wasn't entirely sure that everything that was in the book needed to be there.
I agree.
His relationship with Whitney's relationship with Anna Farina, who is the art gallery mm-hmm. owner that he works with, and he has an affair with her, and it just, when that happened, I kind of rolled my eyes because that's a tenet of literary fiction. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's going to have a ill-advised love affair with this married woman, and you know, and there's like this little tiny bit of a romance that also seems to be coming up for him with one of the local women, that never did actually go anywhere. And I was, being the romance reader that I am,
I was disappointed with that. I was like, okay, why is he having, and maybe that was per intention, like he's mm-hmm. having an affair with the wrong person and he just doesn't realize it type of thing, but I don't know.
But I felt like he did at the end, and then they still didn't do anything about
it.
Yeah,
I know, I agree. I felt like by the end he kind of understood that, but then why not do something about it, you know, and it fell flat for me.
It was very, very flat. Like, mm-hmm. she was trying for some really good things and she just didn't quite get it.
Right. I was like, it was just not quite there. And I felt like, you know, like the, you know, the components, the redemption, you know, that I was talking about earlier. It, you know, it was like she started some really, really profound transformational moments for the characters, but yet they never quite got there. And it was,
and we didn't see them on page either. Like, we just sort of told that they happened.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I felt like a lot of the sort of like there was a lot of plot development that didn't need to be there, and a lot of just general, just things in general that just, it didn't add anything to the storyline, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was kind of, it fell really flat for me. I was disappointed. I don't have anything else to say about it. It was an okay read, and
we both fell asleep at points reading it. And
I mean, I finished it eventually. But the thing that happened to me was I fell asleep. I started reading it while I was going to bed, but I wasn't ready for bed yet. So I read like 2 hours of, you know, read into it for about a couple hours, and then, fell asleep and woke up and read the last couple hours and didn't really feel like I had missed a whole lot. Of course, I went back and reread the part that I missed and still don't feel like I missed a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, hands down to her for giving it a try. And by all means, if you enjoyed the book, let us know, because that's the kind of feedback we need. It takes all kinds to make a world. And just because we didn't like something does not mean that you shouldn't have liked it. So moving on from there, because we're just disappointing you all around today, we had a disappointing book and a disappointing announcement. We're going to talk about books that, or series of that, choose one, basically, that we felt ended in a disappointing way. And of course, my pick is going to be the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. Oh my God, that was the most disappointing ending. I was so upset. And I think that that cured me of the, of reading a book's ending first, because I was one of those people that, always did that. Even if it was just the last couple sentences, just know that it ended the way that I thought, or that it ended happily. And I got to the 7th book in the Dark Tower series, and I read the end before reading the beginning, and I so wish I had not done that. It ruined the 7th book for me, and it ruined the whole series. I was very, very upset.
I think I have told the story on this podcast before about how somebody spoiled the entire end of the Dark Tower series for me when I was not expecting it.
Oh,
and I
no.
Any of them.
Uh huh.
And now I can't, like, remember that part.
Oh, daggone. That's awful. Yeah. I did read the book, the 7th book, and there are some things about the series that are just fantastic, but it is forever marred for me by the fact that I read the ending of that book first and was so completely, it was not what I expected and it was not what I wanted. And it was so disappointing. I felt like if I had read the 7th book, from the beginning, like a good person, I would have been sort of prepared, but I didn't. And I wasn't. Anyway, enough about mine. What's your pick?
So my pick, you know, the one that quickly came to mind was another reason why we need to take a break from this podcast, because I thought about A Little Life by Hanya Yaga.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Where, the end of that book was essentially, like, why the hell did we just read all 37 hours of this book?
Yeah.
To get to that.
What? Why? Yeah. I totally understand that.
So, and that was my pick, so.
Mm-hmm. And that was,
I did that to me. I can't even be like, why did you pick this, Erin?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, so many people loved that book. And I felt like, based on the fact that it was so popular, so many people, it was such a good pick. And it was, there was so much suffering that, and it was so over the top.
It didn't need to be there.
And it didn't need to be there. And you're right.
And I think that like, I feel like it's horrible to say, and I didn't like being put in this position where like, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking like, oh my, I don't believe you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't believe you anymore. Although that said, I think that, like, the other book that came to mind was I had been reading this young adult mystery series, that, like, romantic mystery series called The Academy by C.L. Stone, and I read, like, all of them within, like, 3 weeks of each other. And the last book, I hated it so much.
Oh no!
And it was not the end of the series. She wrote another one that was on Kindle Unlimited, so I acquired it because I just want to know if it's going to continue. Like, I was so invested in books 1 through 9.
Oh my god!
This is book 10 was so horrible, but it's like, well, maybe book 11 won't suck so much. I don't know.
It's been my experience that all those series that extend to book after book after book just start to really suck after a while. Other series that have started to suck, it was like, it was not disappointing because I knew that they were going to, so I was prepared. And you know, I was getting hints, you know, you would get hints along the way that they were going to just continue to drag out. And it's sort of gotten to the point, I mean, like with The Wheel of Time. Oh my God, there's another one? Oh, heavens, you're kidding. 13 books? Are you serious? And, but you have to read them because you're invested in them. And I don't like being put in that position. So those make me mad more than anything. I felt the same about
Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
too.
I do too. I feel that way about it. And I don't even know, like, if I'm going to want to read the 6th and 7th books when they come out, because the TV show has, like, so gotten away from the books that I don't know if he even wants to write the 6th and 7th books anymore. And if the author's even invested in them. And that's sometimes how that feels. Like, authors just want to finish the series, and it really shows in the books.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was the way that Terry Goodkind felt about the, I almost said Terry Brooks. Shoot. Terry Goodkind felt about the, Sword of Truth series that I read and became very invested in, even though there was so much, like, Ayn Rand philosophy that came through towards the end. I still, read all of them. By the end of it, I felt like he really wanted it to end really bad by book 11. and then I read some articles and some interviews with him, because again, this was a series I was really really enjoyed, and it had huge amounts of potential, and it was great when it first started. But I was reading, you know, some of his commentary and things that he was saying, and he was like, Tor wanted him to do another series and he really did not want to, and you can so tell.
Yeah,
the series with the zombies and the, oh my god, I don't even remember what it's called anymore, but it's like, what happens after? And I, you know, I've read some of them, and you can so tell that he's not interested anymore. An author that I don't get that sense from is Terry Brooks, and I'm glad that I that's why I almost said this. I don't get that sense from him. Like, he's still writing the Shannara books, and he's just churning them out, and they're still good.
Like, he seems like he's good at coming up with fresh ideas.
Yeah,
like the concept work.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about Mercedes Lackey, who, you know, the Valdemar books. She's written those for like 30 some odd years now, and I think that you can tell by reading, like, the reading things that she's put out since that are not part of that world, that she's much more invested in, like, literally anything else she's written.
Yeah.
But, you know, I haven't read any, like, the latest Valdemar stuff that she's that she's been putting out, because I just feel like everything that I've heard about what she's done, like, you know, like her latest book, she's tried to kind of make it a little, make the series a little, like, darker, more Game of Thrones-esque, and I'm not here for it.
Yeah. And I think what Terry Brooks did was kind of interesting. Like, he went and he wrote about what happens after, and then he went and wrote about what happened at the beginning, which is kind of fun, because people, and I think people wanted him to do it, and so he did it. And it was kind of fun. So it was like, you know, you learned first about what happens after the Great Catastrophe or whatever it was they called it. I forget. And then later on in the whole universe building, he went back and wrote what happened at the beginning. And I kind of like that. That was kind of interesting. But I felt like, but I feel like not every author's worldview lends itself to having that done to it. But yeah, once you write about a universe for a while, in most cases, it seems to get really stale. Even if you write about like characters that are not protagonists and you try to turn them into protagonists, it's not where it doesn't work too well.
Yeah.
Usually.
And I think that, you know, with romance, that the issues are kind of different from what they are in fantasy, because, you know, usually in romances you have different couples throughout right. the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like that's a risk that you run, and like I can respect Nalini Singh, who has the Psy Changeling books that are really good, but like she wrote I think about like 15 of them, and then she was like, you know, I'm going to end this story arc. And then like she's still writing in that universe, but they're like, it's a different set of characters and a different kind of generation, and other things are going on.
Right.
And I can appreciate that she ended, like, you know, she's still like, I want to play in the sandbox, but I'm going to end this particular one on a good note so that, you know, mm-hmm. I can write something else.
Right. And I think that's a good idea. And I respect authors who can do that. I think that sometimes for the reader, it can be a bit of an adjustment, but it's not, I feel like it's a better thing to do than continuing on a story arc that just has lost its zest.
I do too. and again, like with romances, I was thinking about this romance author named T.S. Joyce, who writes a lot of these little short Kindle Unlimited novellas. Mm-hmm. And they all, like, you read one T.S. Joyce book and you either like it or you don't, but you pretty much read them all.
Uh-huh.
But she's the sort of author that I like because for that reason, like sometimes, you know, like we talked about needing a little mindless brain candy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, she's been like her most popular series. Now she's writing like the kids of the main characters in that series. And it's just like, okay, but these are the same stories that you basically wrote before. And there's not a real sense of like time and place and how life would be different a generation later. Like these are they act the same way their parents did. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no, honey, I think you right. need to write something else.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up, but we would like to hear from you, even though we're on break. And if you have any ideas about how we can improve the podcast, different things we can do, to spice it up, essentially, please let us know by emailing bhapodcast@gmail.com, tweeting Book Hoarders on Twitter, or by visiting the website at bhapodcast.com.
And we would love to still hear from you individually. You can contact Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Edgar, or I am on Twitter at Bardsong. That's basically it.
So we will return one way or the other and let you know what's going to be happening. But over the next few months, we would like to hear from you and hear your thoughts on what direction we should take this podcast, if any. And by all means, if you say you never want to hear from us again, we will respect that and put it into our feedback bag.
Yes.
Yeah. So in any event, right now we will simply end this shenanigan and say bye. Bye.
To contact the Book Hoarders, send email to bhapodcast@gmail.com. Follow Book Hoarders on Twitter. And visit the website at bhapodcast.com.